You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Are you tired of the I can't mindset? The I'm not good enough mindset? Do you feel like your negative thoughts control your life? Well, you came to the right place. Because in the next 30 minutes, you will learn how to break free from the limiting mindset of anxiety, fear, victimization, depression, trauma, and self-hatred by reprogramming your subconscious mind. It's time to master your mind with Dr. Erica.
Hello, good people, and welcome to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am so excited today with the guests that I have. I just want everyone to take a deep breath, deep and release. And I'd like to start my show with the idea that today is a good day. And it's a good day because we are here, we are alive, we are breathing, which means that we have an opportunity to create newly our new day today. And so I am a psychologist. I practice mental health. I've been doing it for over 23 years now. And so I want to bring you the guests, the books, the information that empower you to recreate and create better lives for yourself. And trust, as you're learning, I'm learning. And so one of my daily practices, apart from meditation, is the daily use of CBD. And I often have to re-educate people on CBD being a derivative of oil from the hemp plant, not marijuana. So it doesn't get you high. And we have receptor sites in every organ of our body that takes in CBD. And what our endocannabinoid system, that is a system that all humans have, what it does is it brings our bodies back into balance. And we all need balance because there's so much external from us that kind of throws us off, whether it's emotionally, mentally, physically, the air we breathe, the food we eat. And so it's so important to really create and have that homeostasis. And so on that note, I encourage you to try CBD. I'm always offering new information, new workshops, my services. Please check out my website at healthyminds.expert, because really my goal for myself and for everyone listening is that we begin to develop healthy minds in which we can create from. And so my special guest today is Leonard Perlmutter. And I mean, I was just praying, and so I'm so blessed today that he is with us. If you're struggling or unhappy in any aspect of your life, chances are you made a choice that wasn't tuned into your conscious. We've all done it. Now, a brilliant new book by Leonard Perlmutter, Your Conscience, The Key to Unlock Limitless Wisdom and Creativity and Solve All of Life's Challenges, shows you how to give your conscious sway in your life so that all of your decisions support and guide you to act in your highest good, leading to a life of joy, love, peace, and both personal and professional success. Leonard is one of the Western world's pioneers in the introduction of meditation into the cultural firmament, having founded the American Meditation Institute in Avril Park, New York, in 1996. AMI's courses are now approved and accredited by the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association. Leonard also serves as the author and editor of Transformation, the Journal of Meditation as Mind-Body Medicine. Leonard's first book, The Heart and Science of Yoga, the American Meditation Institute's Empowering Self-Care Program for a Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life, is an encyclopedic guide to meditation and the yoga science that lies behind it. The book and its corresponding curriculum taught by Leonard in his foundations class has enthusiastically endorsed by popular medical luminaries like Mrs. Dean Ornish, Mehmet Oz, and Larry Doocy. Over the past 25 years, Leonard has served on the faculties of the New England Institute of Ayurvedic Medicine in Boston, Massachusetts, and the International Himalayan Yoga Teachers Association in Calgary, Canada. He has studied in Rishikesh, India, and is a direct disciple of Swami Rama of the Himalayas, the man who, in laboratory conditions at the Menninger Institute, demonstrated that blood pressure, heart rate, and the autonomic nervous system can be voluntarily controlled. These research demonstrations have been one of the major cornerstones of the mind-body movement. Leonard has presented informative workshops on the benefits of meditation and yoga science at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, Kaiser Permanente, and Albany Medical College, the New York Times Forum on Yoga Science, and the Commonwealth Club of California, the University of Wisconsin School of Nursing, and the Washington University Medical School, the University of Colorado Medical School, and the West Point Association of Graduates. My God, this is amazing. So I just want to welcome today with us Leonard Perlmutter. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
And so I just really want to hand it over to you and really have you really talk about the conscious and the four functions of the mind.
Sure. That really is the centerpiece of the book that I have just written, Your Conscience. And it's important to recognize the power of the mind because the mind is our most powerful asset. And it can be our most challenging adversary. So we need to coordinate the functions of the mind. We've all, since early childhood, I think that we've all had an intuitive feeling that there were different voices in our mind. Nobody really ever taught us anything about that, but as it turns out, we were right. There are different voices in our mind. There are four of them, and I'm going to explain each one individually. The first function that I want to talk about is the ego. Now, ego is really not what we think it is. It's not the limited definition of what Western psychology defines it as, being puffed up and full of oneself, all-knowing. No, the ego actually is hardwired to the reptilian brain. And like the reptilian brain, it means that the ego is heavily invested in self-preservation of the form. Okay? And so because of that, self-preservation is number one. Is the number one purpose of the ego, to maintain the integrity of the form, you know, our mind, body, sense complex. Mm-hmm. And to do that, to stay alive, the ego engages in different kinds of relationships. And when the ego is in the midst of a relationship, it always cuts that relationship in half. And says, oh, this portion is pleasant, so I define this as good, and I want to reprise this. Over here, this portion, this is unpleasant. I define this as bad, and I want to eliminate this from our lives. Okay? But we already know that that which is pleasant isn't always good for us, and we also know that that which is unpleasant isn't always bad for us. But if we get locked down into what the ego's limited perspective is, that only follow the pleasant and avoid the unpleasant, then we are going to become very mentally inflexible. And that mental inflexibility inevitably is going to create a body that is inflexible, that cannot assimilate the energy coming through the breath and through the food that we eat. And the body begins to break down and we experience pain. It's just not necessary. But that's the limited perspective. Now, I have to admit that the ego, although it only has a limited perspective, it's not always wrong. It's not always wrong. I need a healthy ego right now to have this conversation and sound intelligent. I need a healthy ego to drive an automobile. So I don't want to get rid of the ego. I want to educate the ego. I want to expand its horizon. And I can do that through the experimenting process, which I'll talk about in a moment. So here's the ego. This is one of the voices. Now you have to remember, the ego has no power to make decisions for us, only can advise us. But in this advising, the ego is loud and pushy and insistent. Okay? We know people like that. No names, just we know people like that. Okay, so the ego is insistent and loud and pushy. Big, big voice. That's the ego. Then we have the senses. Now, the senses are very interesting because they are the conduit through which our creative energy explores the world, looking for happiness, looking for security, looking for health. And so the mind extrudes our creative energy continually. I would say at this point in history, habitually, and in an addictive way. So much of our creative energy goes out through our eyes and our nostrils and our mouth and our ears and our hands and our feet, looking for happiness, looking for security, looking for health. And here's the problem. When I don't find what I'm looking for, I can't repurpose that energy. It's just gone. And if the truth be known, we need a lot of creative energy to fulfill the purpose of our lives. We have so many duties and responsibilities that we want to do to fulfill our purpose. And yet, if I dribble here and dribble there, my creative energy through looking and smelling and tasting and hearing everything that's available, then I'm not going to be able to have enough energy for the things that are truly important. So it's very analogous to examining a tube of toothpaste. If you squeeze a tube of toothpaste, oh, the toothpaste comes out. But it's impossible, I believe, for us anyway, to put the toothpaste back in the tube once it's out. Same with our creative energy. Once it goes out through the eyes or the nostrils or the mouth or the ears or the hands or the feet, that's it. So the senses is heavily invested in the appearance of pleasure. So it's all about the front, so to speak. And there's no information about what the back looks like. But even with passing pleasure, it usually leaves in its wake some form of pain. It's not lasting. It's not really what we've been looking for. So the senses, just like the ego, they only have a limited perspective. But I have to admit that they're not always wrong. I like a fine dinner. I like an exquisite dessert. And I want to be able to enjoy it and experience it without guilt. So that's the senses. And life is to be enjoyed. So we have the ego, we have the senses. These are the first two voices of our mind, the counselors, if you will, of the mind, the ones that can make suggestions. And boy, do they make suggestions. Like the ego, the senses are pretty pushy themselves. So that's the first two. Then the third is the unconscious. Some people call it the subconscious. This is the storehouse of all of our merits and demerits. Everything that we deem essential to our self-preservation, memories, pleasant, unpleasant, imagination, pleasant, unpleasant, they're all stored in the unconscious mind. And the unconscious mind, even though it contains some faulty concepts, you know, the faulty concepts that we got from mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or our siblings or our teachers or celebrities or politicians, they're all stored on our hard drive in our unconscious mind. But they're not always wrong, the unconscious mind concepts, even though they're limited. Some things in the unconscious are very valid and very helpful, but a lot of it is faulty. So we have the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind. All three of them are often wrong, but never in doubt. And they advise what's to be done and what's not to be done, what's to be done and what's not to be done. Then we have the conscience. Now, the conscience is very interesting because it is the only function of the mind that can discriminate, determine, judge, and decide. It's the decision maker. The other three functions of the mind, ego, senses, and unconscious mind, they can only suggest, but it's the conscience that makes the choice. Now, that was a game changer for me, because what does it mean? It means that every single choice that we have ever made, or every single choice we will make, has been and always will be made by our conscience. But the conscience can make two kinds of choices. Ideally, we want to be able to quiet down the ego, senses, and unconscious mind so that the conscience can do the wonderful work that it has the capacity to do. The conscience acts as a mirror. That's it. It acts as a mirror, but it's not any kind of mirror. It's the kind of mirror of the mind that can reflect perfect, super conscious wisdom, intuition from the super conscious portion of the mind at the center of consciousness, at the core of our being, at the core of what we euphemistically refer to as our soul. And it can not only access that superconscious wisdom, but it has the reflective quality to bring it into our conscious mind so that we can consciously be aware of it and use it to determine our thoughts, our words, and our actions so we can be led for our highest good. But if the ego, senses, and unconscious mind are sort of out of control, hijacking the bus all the time, then that noise is going to overpower the reflective quality of the conscience to bring superconscious wisdom into our mind. And instead, what happens? The conscience, which is the only function of the mind that can decide, will simply rubber stamp the loud, pushy, often incorrect concepts and suggestions from the ego, senses, and unconscious mind. So these three amigos, the ego, senses, and unconscious mind, have sort of hijacked our lives. First of all, they've hijacked the mind. They're in charge. And all of them, because the ego is tethered and hardwired to the reptilian brain, they all see change of habit as some form of death to them. And so they're resistant. So the key to successful living is to coordinate the four functions of the mind. And we do that through the experiment process. Here's an example. Now, First of all, you have to know, before I explain the experiment process, you have to remember that the highest principle of all is a word called ahimsa. It means non-injury, non-harming, non-violence. That means we have to love ourselves in the midst of attempting to experiment with new habits and give up old habits that conflict with our inner wisdom. And to do that, we're asked not to take on too much too soon. We're asked to choose seemingly insignificant no-brainers initially. It's black and white, really. And then get buy-in from the ego senses and unconscious mind just to try it and see what kind of experience they can have. So when I'm in the midst of a relationship, a simple relationship, you see, initially, I call a meeting with the ego, senses, unconscious mind, and the conscience, and we all sit down around the kitchen table. And I sort of play the parent, okay? I'm the moderator. So I tell all of the four functions of the mind, well, we've just finished dinner, and now there's a question that arises. Are we going to brush our teeth, or are we not going to brush our teeth? So I'd like to call on the ego first, and if you could just share your opinion. Ego? Well, I don't think that brushing the teeth is a very pleasant experience, so I vote no. Okay, well, thank you very much, I say, as the parent of the ego. Thank you. Now you can sit down. Okay, now I call upon the senses. What's your feeling about brushing our teeth right now that we have just finished this dinner? And the senses say something to the effect that, oh, you know, I had a wonderful dinner that was really excellent, and the dessert was fabulous. I haven't had apple pie in a long time, and that's my favorite. And so, insofar as this brushing of the teeth routine, I'm out, but I'll have a second piece of apple pie. Okay, well, thank you very much for your perspective. And now we'll go to the unconscious. What is your opinion? Well, my opinion is the same as the others. I'm with them. Okay, well, thank you very much. Now I'd like all three of you, ego, senses, and unconscious mind, to just sit quiet just for a moment so that we can hear the super conscious wisdom that the conscience can reflect from the super conscious portion of our mind. Beyond the conscious and beyond the unconscious. The same portion of the mind where Albert Einstein saw mathematical equations, and the same portion of the mind where Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. So let's listen what the conscience is reflecting from the superconscious mind concerning brushing our teeth. Conscience, would you please address the other three? Thank you. And so the conscience says something to the effect, now we all know that life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And for a marathon, we need healthy teeth. We need healthy and strong gums. We need a healthy and strong immune system. And with a 2-minute investment in brushing our teeth, we can assure ourselves that we will be able to have healthier teeth, healthier gums, and a very strong immune system. So my suggestion is we take a time out, we go into the bathroom together, brush the teeth, and then come back to the kitchen table and talk about our experience. And that's what happens. It's a relatively simple, easy experiment. So we all march into the bathroom, we brush the teeth, we come back. Then me, as the parent, I ask each function of the mind for a little summary. Ego? Well, wasn't as bad as I feared. And I didn't die. So it's okay. It was all right. Thank you. Senses, what was your experience? Well, the senses say, when the tongue glides over the tongue after I brush my teeth, I liked it that there's no moss on my teeth. And I don't care for that mossy feeling on my teeth at all. So I had a pleasant experience. Thank you. Unconscious mind, what do you say? Wasn't so bad. Wasn't so bad. So what has happened? I have just created an easy experiment for the ego, senses, unconscious mind, and the conscience to operate. The ego, senses, and unconscious mind give their opinions from the limited perspectives that they have. And then the conscience weighed in with its superconscious wisdom that it can reflect from the superconscious portion of the mind. And for the sake of an experiment, they all did it. And I was able to provide them a pleasant experience, a change of habit without dying, without being oppressed. So what does that mean? They trust me more now than they did a few moments ago. And I build on that with each new experiment. And that expands the panorama of the ego, of the senses, and of the unconscious mind to be more in favor of trusting the conscience as our collective guide.
So it sounds like the experiment is just a dialogue with each part or function of the mind that ultimately allows the way for the conscious mind to
Conscience,
kind
yeah.
of, right, to take more center stage or to kind of be heard.
And followed.
Wow. Now, how does the meditative practice of ahimsa strengthen that conscious mirror or that conscious mind?
Ahimsa, non-injury, non-harming, means that we don't take on too much too soon. So we want to be happy. We want to be healthy. We want to be secure. How are we going to get to point B from point A? Do we have a business plan? Do we have a philosophy of life? Now we have a philosophy of life and a business plan. All we have to do is coordinate the functions of the mind, but not to take on too much too soon. Now, if I never lifted weights to build muscle, the last thing I would want to do is to start lifting 100 or 200 pounds. That would hurt me. That is not in harmony with ahimsa, non-injury, non-harming. But if I start off with just a couple of pounds and then a couple more after a week or two, and slowly, slowly I'll be lifting some substantial weight and I'll be building some muscles and I won't be injured. That's the key. That's the key. And our seated meditation practice provides us four very important tools and skills. In meditation, we train the mind to be one-pointed, not multi-pointed, which is impossible. That depresses the mind and depresses our immune system. But to train the mind to be one-pointed, this gives us access to our conscience and the super conscious mind. Because with one pointed attention, what I'm doing is I'm creating a space between stimulus and response. Now, if I have a space between stimulus and response, that space between stimulus and response provides me freedom, real freedom, to redirect my awareness to the conscience to find out what the superconscious wisdom is and how it can help me make this choice right now about this stimulus with which I have a relationship. So one-pointed attention is a benefit of meditation. Detachment, we increase the space between stimulus and response. And that brings wisdom, intuitive wisdom to me, to know what's to be done and what's not to be done, And as long as I can serve that wisdom, that superconscious wisdom from the conscience, I slowly, slowly build the muscles of willpower.
Wow. Okay. We only have less than a minute. I'm sorry. I did not want to end. But please tell my listeners where they can get the book, where they can learn more about the practices, the training, the tools that you provide to strengthen the conscience.
Two websites. First one is for the book, yourconscience.org, yourconscience.org. The second is the website for the American Meditation Institute. This is where I do all my teaching. And that website is AmericanMeditation.org, AmericanMeditation.org. One last thought, and that is, I don't want anybody to believe a word I said. What I am interested only in is if you are interested in experimenting with it so you can know the truth for yourself. And I would help you in that endeavor. But don't be a sucker. Have your doubting Thomas hat on. Be a critical thinker and a critical scientist. And do the experiment yourself. Turn every relationship and your mind-body-sense complex into a laboratory. Then you will know the truth. And that's the truth that will set you free.
I love it. Thank you so much, Leonard Perlmutter. I would love to have you back for part two, because this was just a brief overview of the four functions of the mind. And really, your conscience is the guide. And it's so important that we work to strengthen it. So I just want to thank you for sharing all of your knowledge and your words of wisdom. And I welcome you back for part two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. We will be back next with another terrific episode that will allow you to master your mind. Please visit hemphappier.com for more information about Dr. Erica and CBD oil. See you next week.